Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Footloose and Fancy Free episode of Back to Basics. It has been forever since I've seen you all, or 5 minutes if we're in a recording session, and I am still, if you can believe it or not, Pastor Don. I know, it's amazing, isn't it? And I also joined by our brand new co-host. Oh, wait, no, never mind. It's the same person as always, who we love so much, Courtney Fraley.
Thanks, man.
I do my best. So we are going to be picking up right from where we left off with Genesis chapter 46, which is Jacob bringing his whole family to Egypt. And because this is the Bible, not only is Jacob bringing his entire family to Egypt, but we're going to name each and every one of them.
Which means I don't have to read this one.
I thought about trying to get her to do it, but
I get the impression that your Hebrew is spotty at best, but I'm sure it's better than mine.
You know, despite being a fully trained and accredited Christian pastor, like, I've done my time studying Hebrew and have some degree of fluency in it, but don't put me next to any of our Jewish siblings, because
standard.
Yeah, like, I can do well enough, but don't put me next to any of our Jewish siblings on that one, because they will run circles around me. Enough to get by anyway. So, and I'm sure they would probably have notes on any of my pronunciations anyway. In fact, I'm pretty sure that a number of my seminary professors, were they to watch this, would have notes on my pronunciation as well. So we do our best, is what I'm saying. Shall we begin then?
Not me. I show up here as average as I am every day and just let it roll.
And we love you for it. All right, let's get down to it. Genesis chapter 46, Jacob brings his whole family to Egypt. By the way, I love that they're wildly inconsistent with the naming here. They can't decide whether to call him Jacob or Israel, even though, like, he totally had a name change early on. Like, stop dead naming him. Anyway, moving on. When
continue.
Israel... Oh, sorry?
I just said continue.
When Israel set out on his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba, he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here I am. Then he said, I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again. And Joseph's own hand shall close your eyes. Then Jacob set out from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father, Jacob, their little ones, and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry them. They also took their livestock and the goods that they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and they came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. Now these are the names of the Israelites, Jacob and his offspring, who came to Egypt. Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, and the children of Reuben, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and Carmi. The children of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. The children of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. The children of Judah, Onan, Shelah, Perez, Zerah, but and Onan died in the land of Canaan. Remember, we talked about them. And the children of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. The children of Issachar, Tola, Puva, Jashub, and Shimron. The children of Zebulun, Sered, Elon, and Jahleel. These are the sons of Leah, whom she bore to Jacob in Paddan Aram, together with his daughter Dinah. In all, his sons and his daughters numbered 39. The children of Gad, Ziphon, Haggai.
This says 33.
33. Did I not say 33?
It sounded like 39. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Should have been 33. My bad. In all, his sons and daughters numbered 33. The children of Gad, Ziphon, Haggai, Shuni, Ezbon, Eri, Arodai, and Areli. The children of Asher, Imnah, Ishva, Ishvi, Beriah, and their sister Sarah. The children of Beriah, Heber, and Malchiel. These are the children of Zilpha, whom Laban gave to his daughter Leah. And these she bore to Jacob, 16 persons. The children of Jacob's wife Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin. To Joseph, in the land of Egypt, were born Manasseh and Ephraim, whom Anasaph, the daughter of Potphera, priest of On, bore to him. The children of Benjamin, Bela, Becher, Ashbel, Gera, Naaman, Ehi, Rosh, Mupim, Hupim, and Ard. These are the children of Rachel, who were born to Jacob, 14 persons in all. The children of Dan, Ashum. The children of Naphtali, poor Dan. The children of Naphtali, Jahzeel, Guni, Jezer, and Shillem. These are the children of Bilhah, whom Laban gave to his daughter Rachel, and these she bore to Jacob, 7 persons in all. All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own offspring, not including the wives of his sons, were 66 persons in all. The children of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 70. Israel sent Judah ahead to Joseph to lead the way before him into Goshen. When they came to the land of Goshen, Joseph made ready his chariot and went up to meet his father Israel in Goshen. He presented himself to him, fell on his neck, and wept on his neck a good while. Israel said to Joseph, "I can die now, having seen for myself that you are still alive." Joseph said to his brothers and to his father's household, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come to me. The men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have. When Pharaoh calls you and says, "What is your occupation?" you shall say, "Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our ancestors, in order that you may settle in the land of Goshen, because all shepherds are abhorrent to the Egyptians." All right.
That seems like a lot of setup to just drop the Egyptians hated shepherds, so.
Yeah, well, like, this is a theme that comes throughout the region constantly, is that shepherds were seen as kind of a lower caste in most societies in Levant during that period. And while that wasn't true of the early Israelites, that became true of the Israelites over time as well. And so, by the way, what we see
here...
Lay down. I mean, you spend all your time out in the fields with animals. I don't know. You know,
it's one of those things. The job needs doing.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, but I also don't claim that at any point in history our societies have been, shall we say, rational with the people we've decided are unclean or exclusionary. Like, that's who we decided to pick on in those days. So, fuck it. Ancient humans, man. What are you going to do?
We just haven't changed in a lot of ways, have we? Like, just nope. As a species.
No, we just shifted from occupation to skin color to sexual preference. Like, we're just deciding which thing we want to pick on this generation. Pretty much it. Anywho,
can it be economic class?
Yeah, pick on the rich. Pick on the rich. Anybody? Bueller.
Something that might do everyone some good.
Right. You know, that was Jesus's perspective, by the way. Is like, look, if you're going to exclude anybody, the rich people. Exclude the rich. Fuck them. Here's a needle. There's a camel. You figure it out. Anyway, I think, by the way, I love this part at the end of the chapter where Joseph kind of sits down with them and says, look, here's the spin. this last kind of tag ending on 46 is what I lovingly like to call Echoes of Abraham. Because he's kind of doing the same thing. Like, tell them that you're my sister's shepherds. What's the shepherd equivalent of sister? Livestock keepers. That's it. It's the same shit with the same people, by the way. Let's not forget that, what's his name? The king that we were talking about. Abimelech, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not forget we are dealing with the successors to Abimelech here. That's who Pharaoh is.
Jot that down. We still need like a pin or a t-shirt or something that says Abimelech did nothing wrong.
I will add it to the store as soon as I have time, I promise. But yeah, so like we're already here, and I personally like to take this bit as a, as what we might call epic foreshadowing of what we talked about in the last episode, where God's setting a course and humans are already starting to bat it up and down away in different directions from perfection. Like right here, we're starting with a really good divine correction to the path of God's people that the brothers and everyone had knocked way the hell away by trying to murder Joseph. And now everything's kind of back on track. Pharaoh's on board. It's like, yeah, of course, we're operating out of love. They're your family. Take care of them. And Joseph right away is saying, okay, let's grease the wheels a little bit. Let's maybe not deal with the potential injustice at the heart of things here. And let's just lie a little bit.
This seems less malicious, really, than when Abraham did it, because this reads to maybe it's just through my modern American lens. I mean, it has to be by default. I do have a little bit of an art history education. I understand the importance of context when taking in any media. But that said, to me, this reads kind of like, look, these people are going to be super, super prejudiced against you. So let's just ease our way in a way that makes them think that they decided we're good enough.
Possibly. Like, and that is, I'm not going to lie, that's a piece of it. No two situations are exactly the same, with the only real exception in the Bible, that being the two times that Abraham sold his goddamn wife.
This isn't Abraham, though. This is Jacob.
This is, at its heart, the same sin, but it represents differently. This is a case of
Joseph.
Yeah, this is a case of, taking what Abraham did and applying it in a different context to a community of people rather than to any one individual. Out of, again, like even in Abraham's case, it was a reasonably founded fear, even if it turned out to be irrational. But the piece that I hinge on here is, okay, so the powers that be in Egypt had a bone to pick about shepherds. All right, fair. Who would have the
power? Is it though?
Who would have the power to affect that kind of change? Maybe you should take that up with Pharaoh's right hand. Oh shit. Like, this is why I bring this up as an issue here.
Use your privilege to exact change.
Right. Is this is Joseph's immediate failing in bringing them into Egypt, is that he has privilege, he has power, and there is a present injustice. And I imagine this is part of kind of God's motivation for bringing them in the way that they are coming in now, is to give Joseph an opportunity. All right, you've had all this power. You've accumulated this. Let's use it for good. Here is an opportunity with your own goddamn family to institute social change for the better. Use that privilege. Use that power. And Joseph's like, yes, but have you considered lying instead?
This might just be me projecting my own abandonment issues or whatever, but I obligatory, I am not a professional, but I don't think the circumstances in Jacob's life would necessarily preclude that being a bit of trauma that he carried around, an abandonment complex.
I'm assuming you meant Joseph, but yes. It
means like, okay, yeah, sorry, I keep doing that. to me, it sort of reads like, and I know you're the professional and all that, but it sort of reads like he doesn't want to rock the boat now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, okay, I've got it. I've got everything. I've got an amazing life here, and I've got my family. I get to have my cake and eat it too. I've got the family that abandoned me now owes me a whole ton, and my dad is happy to see me, and my one brother's happy to see me, and the rest of them are not actively trying to kill me, and I've got everything I could want. I don't want to fuck this up.
Yeah.
Like, welcome. It's very relatable.
Well, it's definitely relatable, and this is welcome to the Christian journey here, man. But this is a very nuanced perspective that we don't often consider with the Bible or with ourselves, is that something can be totally understandable, but also not right at the same time. Like, obviously, yeah, it's trauma informed. Like, there's no question about it. This is a guy who has been through some shit, and he's like, look, I got my happy ending. I got mine. I am not going to rock the boat anymore. I'm done. Like, I'm not, I'm not going to fight that fight, because if I don't fight that fight, I get mine. Like,
I feel like that's going to come back on him too, though, because like Pharaoh specifically said, you know, I want them to live on the fat of the land of this nation.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, go sit out here because they don't want you.
Yeah. Now, to be clear,
I'm sure Pharaoh didn't know they were shepherds.
I'm going to extrapolate a little bit, but Joseph could have used his social power and privilege to take his shepherding family, put them right in the goddamn middle of Cairo, and said, okay, these are my people. They're shepherds, and y'all can learn to live with this and start treating your shepherds better. Or he can stick them in a back-ass corner of Goshen and say, look, just don't tell anybody. Like, you're here, you get to live off this, and it's fine. Now, Pharaoh may, in this moment, be like, look, Joseph, they're your family. You can do with them as you want. But what's that going to mean 5-10 generations down the line? What you're going to wind up with is an entire race of people who have been living on the outskirts who are going to be treated like that and will eventually become the basis for a slave cast. Are you serious?
Is that how this worked out? That's not fair.
That's a degree of extrapolation, but like, yeah, that seems to be the direction that the narrative is pointing right now. And again, because we are approaching this from a Christian perspective, we don't have direct access, and I'm not really heavily drawing upon like Midrash and secondary sources and stuff from the Jewish tradition that may shine more light upon this.
We could really use someone on the show who knows their Torah inside and out. Like,
you know, I could like, I mean, the Torah is this here, but like, I could bring up my
mind, I know, you know,
but I'm tired and I don't want to do that right now. But the point of it is the Christian perspective, we don't draw into the Midrash super much. We, particularly as Protestant Christians, we're very much sola scriptura in that sense that we kind of focus on what we have in the canon and don't bring in a lot of kind of secondary narrative sources to augment canon. So in
it's
looking
just
at
fascinating.
This,
if we're going to put it in here to begin with, like,
yeah. Like, but that, that is
the reason
line
for this show, though. So we're trying to do something about it.
Right. That is a line we do draw as Christians, though, is if it wasn't enough to make it in the canon, then we're not really going to give it due consideration there. And particularly this far into the future now, like when we start talking about Midrash and secondary narrative sources, there's not a lot we can do to vouch for their historicity beyond canonical inclusion in the Bible after that much time. So we don't know if they were made up or not. And quite frankly, nobody does. And in the light of that, the Christian approach is to take, well, since we can't determine academic veracity of really any of these stories beyond a certain point, we're going to take canonicity as our guideline rather than historical verifiability. That's the academic line in the sand that most Christian theology and historicity draws. It is what it is.
Sorry, every time I hear the word historicity, it sounds like a made-up word.
Yeah. All words are made up.
That's true.
So, you know, anyway, but the point being, if we take the Bible as it stands, and I'm going to reach back a little bit and say that what I know of Midrash doesn't paint a lot of this space between Genesis and Exodus too much, at least from the bits that I've studied, which, again, Christian pastor, that's a limited role. So if you are a Jewish theologian hanging out in the comments, please feel free to educate me. I'm very happy.
That
send
would be
me a
the,
message
the
and get on the program, man. I'd love to hear from you.
That'd be the second best thing to getting a guest on the show who can like go over.
So,
and be
but
like,
that
actually,
said,
if you look at the Midrash, here's some extra context for this passage.
Yeah. That said, though, from what I have here, this does generally seem to be the arc, because we end Genesis here with them settled in Goshen, and we begin with Exodus 1, which starts with introductory statement, and basically we're right into Moses at that point. So like that period of time isn't really covered scripturally, so all we get is a start point and an end point and a few key details on either end, and so you can kind of guess what happened. It's not explicitly said, but it's kind of wink, wink hinted at a little bit here. And that's about as far as the Bible goes with it. But if we are familiar with the justice arcs of the Bible, of humans fuck up, God corrects, humans turn the direction ever so slightly and shoot off in a different direction, and God sighs mightily and then gets his correcting arm out and starts bending that moral arc again. You know, that's pretty much how the story goes. So when we see Joseph making these particular decisions here, it doesn't say it explicitly, but we can generally assume that, hey, guess what? It's more human fuckuppery happening. That's the thing. So, yeah, we've got that. We've got a brief visit to Jacob by God, and then we have basically a list of any and all biblical names you might ever want to give your children if you want them to be made fun of at American schools.
Hey, I was gonna say, there's like that list. There were some cool names in there,
right?
And granted, I have no clue whether you were pronouncing them remotely correctly either.
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure I got close to.
You pronounce Leah as Leia. So,
that's mostly because the character we transliterate as the letter E in English has more of an S sound in Hebrew. So it wouldn't be Leia. It'd be more like Le'a.
Which is pretty, really, Le'a.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I'd have to check it to make sure they're not actually using the E, like the I-Y transliteration there, but I don't think they are. Again, for you Hebrew scholars hanging out in the comments, I'm only looking at the English at the moment of that, so yeah, I could be wrong. Like, if it's transliterated differently in Hebrew, I will look that up later, and I will smack myself in the head for you. Ancient Hebrew doesn't actually have vowels anyway, and we don't actually know what it was supposed to be, so there's that. But yeah, so that's pretty much it. So we got that brief visit from God. We got all these different names. And as someone, by the way, I've said this a couple of times in Genesis, and I've given you many, many geeky deep cuts throughout our exploration of Genesis, but I absolutely love just how many of these different names were pulled from for that late 90s epic video game Xenogears. Like, I'm just coming across so many familiar names, like Zohar, for example, which are all buried in the text, and it just makes my geeky self giggle. Because, ancient Hebrew names are great for making something sound all mystical and whatnot. They're like they're the Chinese characters tattoos of the ancient world.
I was just like, oh, Potiphera, I remember
her. Yeah. Like, hey, there's Onan. Oh, wait, no, there he's not. He did. Yeah, we know what happened to him. He spent a little too much time. No, that wasn't it. That wasn't it. You thought I was going to say it? I did not.
All right.
So,
I think I'm given the sheer amount of this that's just names. Yeah, I think we've pretty much covered everything.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anything else you want to say before we wrap it on up?
I will say, as one last note, the interaction between God and Jacob at the beginning of the chapter here. When we talk about the response to God as, "Here I am, Lord," we often talk about that from like the call of Samuel and stuff like that later on. But it's worth noting that that echoes back even to here. Like, we get that in Jacob, we get that in Moses, we get that sometimes in Abraham. Like, this is a repeated signatory way to respond to God throughout the text. And it is, in many ways, it's meant to be almost like a sign of faith to respond to the voice of God by saying, "Here I am." And I even draw certain connections between that all the way back to the creation story, where God was walking through the garden, wondering where all these supercharged monkeys he made went. And it's going, "Hey, where are y'all?" Like, setting aside the omniscience of God in that story and that whole discussion, which, if you're interested in that, go all the way back to the beginning of these episodes. Great discussion we had on that so very, very long ago. But there's an echo to that of God calling out in the garden, and Adam and Eve were hiding because they were afraid. And now, from that point on, anytime someone answers God in faith, the response is, "Here I am, Lord." That is the appropriate response. Always answering the way we ought to have at the beginning. And there is, again, the scripture is poetic like that. It's meant to have these very subtle echoes of what was and is to come, foreshadowing and back references and stuff like that. But also, it's just like, there is that note of relational tragedy in the way we communicate between ourselves and God, that the expression of faithful subservience is us saying the thing we should have said in the garden. Here I am, Lord. And that continues on through the whole Bible. Like, these themes are present and they shape and they develop and they grow. And as we get to the end of Genesis here, which, my God, friends, we are almost done with this book. We are so close to the end. We are finishing 46. That means we've got 7, 8, 9, and 50. We are going to be done here within another month or so. It's almost time. And fun fact, we may even double up on some of these chapters because the end of this is not a lot. Like, we've kind of hit our climax already. Not much more left to talk about. So we've kind of set our course here, and that's just it. Anything else we want to pick at, Ben?
No, I think we're good.
All right. So, my friends, as usual, the requests remain the same. Come join us on Discord. Come hop onto our website and find all the different things you can do, ranging from watching our various other videos, joining us at the church in Japan if you're in the neighborhood, while you can even donate money if you feel so inclined. You'll feel that you have to. There's a reason we put this stuff out for free, of course. But if you have the means, we certainly wouldn't say no. It does definitely help us do things like eat and not be dead, which are useful things for us if we want to keep generating content. So please feel free to participate in our community, however and in whatever way you feel capable and called, because we like having you as part of our community. That's why we started out with a Discord server and not with a physical church, though we have one now. We started out with a Discord server, so no matter who you are, no matter where you are, you can pop up your freaking phone and go to church. Like, that's a cool thing. I like it. It makes me giggle. So come do that thing. And most importantly, I would invite you to do, as all of us should in all times and all places, to follow the wisdom of Dear Courtney.
Like, share, and subscribe.
And comment.
Yes, please comment below. Good, bad, indifferent, whatever.
Help us combat the algorithm and get us before many, many eyes by telling us how crazy we are. And
let us know that somebody's listening.
Yeah, you know? Yell at us about midrash, which I promise you is actually not a medical condition. It's part of, like, Jewish scholarship, I promise. So come yell at us, please. I love it when you do that, even if you're crazy.
Yell at us about how we're being insensitive, Dawn.
Well, you know, comes with the territory. I'm white and I'm male. What do you expect? You know, speaking of owning that privilege, right? I think that's a good place for us to stop for today. Most importantly, you all have yourselves a wonderful week, and we will catch you on the next episode as we draw ever closer to the end of the book of Genesis after two long years. So take care, and we'll see you next time. Bye, y'all.
Bye.